Media Network.
It's Roast with KM Bell and Tom. They're your Roastmasters.
And then you say something funny.
No wire hangers ever!
And that's what happens when you live in the house of the abuser, Jeff.
Were you hanging out with my mother?
No kidding, man. Actually, I was going to talk about briefly how what seems to be happening in the pathology of the national experience with the White House is it's life in the house of the abuser. And if you lived under an abusive household, a parent, you now know what may trigger you are those moments of living in terror and fear and complete emotional turmoil. And in fact, creates, you know, great emotional stunting and damage.
I think I processed my abusive parent differently then.
I took some time. I mean, by the time I got to college, I realized I literally had PTSD, and I resented the fuck out of that household and yeah. What happened. Now, I know my siblings are going to listen to this. And, you know, I'm not singling anybody out. I think we were all in a situation out of control.
I know he's talking about you. Yeah, you.
You know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think that it isn't as much. It took me some time to process it. But owning my anger was one of the most important things in stepping forward in my own life. And that's the reason why I say that, because I think that America needs to own up, and it's up to the rest of us. So that's my two bits right there. All done.
Yeah, mine had a lot to do with just to boil it down to its basic thing was basically taking punches for my brother and my sister. And you know, they don't really process it the same way that I do.
You're to the taking point the punches.
Well, my sister's in denial that it was as bad as it was, and my little brother knows that it was bad. But you know, our relationship at the time that severed when I left the house at 12, you know, never got back, and so he didn't really see. Just I mean, it's 2 years is the difference, and it can. You know, that's a lot. 10 years old, man. That's
too much.
It is. And so, you know, he never saw it, but it was just basically dealing with the angry mom and me being a wonderful target for getting in the middle and just being the magnet for her ire, disappointment, anything that went bad in life. It was really easy to lay it on the redhead because that was kind of how it went. So I deal with my... Yeah, I own my anger. So I mean, I can go with you on that. I do. It's mine. But it just that sort of thing led to why I've been constantly, you know, doing work for the underdog and basically
because you identify with the underdog.
Well, it's
how you that's exactly the state of which you grew up in. And I think in a way, because I was the target of bullies at school, in the neighborhood, and the house being what it was, it taught me a lesson as being the other. It taught me the lesson of looking out for those who didn't have the power, who didn't have the voice.
Right.
And actually, in a way, if that's a good lesson to learn, I'm not a silver lining person. Fuck that shit. I'm a kind of a person that
you
is going
it.
To try to continue to heal off of this. But I think that's probably a good thing to learn is looking out for those who don't have the power.
Makes me fight. And I have burned so many bridges because I just have so little tolerance for bullshit. And, you know, so if I have a resentment and I don't anymore, really, my wife says I do, but she's wrong. It built up in me an intolerance for anything angrily dipshit, I can't stand it. And I fight. And it's my professional career. It's why I lost my radio show. You know, it's why I work so goddamn cheap. So yeah, the problem that I have right now is that Trump came along. My training is in place. I'm just fucking tired.
We're all exhausted.
Yeah. And
fried and burned out.
Well, it was
in the face.
Eight years of watching the rebirth of racism. And, you know, I live in a state where racism is everywhere and everybody pretends that it's not. And when you point it out, no matter how accurate your description of the racist thing, people here are so busy being in permanent denial that you're just some asshole who's calling names. So I could see it throughout.
I mean, there's a certain level. I mean, I'm going out on a limb here, but thinking living in a Mormon dominated state, there's a certain, shall I say, accepted social. There's a social nicety there that everyone is supposed to be. What I always thought of the Mormon structure is the Velvet Mafia.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
They're very sweet on the outside, and they're very I'm generalizing, but this is from my own experience, is that people generally do not want to acquiesce the more negative. They want to keep it on the up. They want to keep it positive, never want to acknowledge anything that might be derogatory.
It's there. It's in code. It's fucking ridiculous, and everybody pretends that it's not a thing, but you know, I've seen examples of it in my own life with family members, all the way from, you know, grandparents on my mother's side to people my own age that I'm related to now. And you do, you point at it and you go, that's racism. And they're like, no, it's not. And once they're at, no, it's not, there is nothing you could do. You could beat them over the head with it. And no matter how true it is that they're racist, they don't think of it that way. It's trying to explain, I mean, to one who's not, you know, and they, okay, so looking at racism, just,
oh, they're wrong anyway. So.
There's the active, you know, wear a swastika, run over people with your car racists, you know? These are the tiki torch dipshits that
right.
in those guys.
And active then, and aggressive.
Yeah, and then there's the folks that they have a white superiority complex. They believe
that white superiority complex. That's great.
Yeah.
Go on.
They believe that American exceptionalism is super duper and not a problem. They believe that basically anything that they do is fine, but they don't. It's why. Okay. Taking a step back, it's why when you say white people to white people, you get this little look of shock. And the reason that is they are more used to just being called people. Everyone else gets an attachment of color or race or religion. Right. White people just expect to be called people. And that's one of the reasons why when I talk about white people, I call them white people. Because we're the ones that started running around slapping labels on everything. So throughout my life, when I have watched folks that believe that because they do not actively lynch or set fires or salt crops, that they're not racist, but they're still the ones that, you know,
yeah,
it was one of my favorite things I saw on the internet earlier this year, and that was these two gentlemen, you know, out of Southern California, went back east to like fucking Connecticut or New Hampshire or some bullshit like that, and they rented an Airbnb, and the picture that they put up on their Instagram was the two of them with two police officers, and the caption was, "Our Airbnb is so good that the neighbors thought we were robbing the place." And it's two black guys that were doing the Airbnb house. And the neighbors saw two black guys and called the fucking cops. That that neighbor is racist. Now, is that neighbor a swastika-wielding, you know, tiki torch-huffing dipshit? Probably not.
Just not.
Yeah, just racist. Not a Nazi. And there is a difference. Because racists you feel bad for and you fucking talk to them and you try and change your goddamn mind. Nazis? Nah, punch them in the mouth. They're too far gone. Nothing you say is ever going to change a fucking Nazi, white supremacist, you know, First Nation. One of those dipshits with the fucking black flags with the blue stripe. Fuck them.
They kill people who disagree with them.
Yeah. So punching them? Nah, you're still not hitting their low level. You're just burning off a little excess energy. A little punchy. Just saying.
Just hit him.
Well, that didn't start out funny.
No, it wasn't. No, but it's thoughtful. I mean, we're catching up after a couple of weeks. There's been a lot of shit that's been going on.
That's true. Lots of pain,
fires and shit, but go on.
Catching up. So, and you've asked about it, and I obviously have no problem really talking about my personal life.
No, actually, that's a good thing. It can be that. This could be just about a lot of things. So, we basically talk about what interests me. And if that interests me, we can talk about it.
Sure.
If it interests you, we can talk about it.
It's good to be included.
Both sides have to take care.
My throat's fucked up.
Yeah. So you went to the doctors. Do you want to talk about that, or you don't?
Yeah, let's just burn it off real quick, because I'll be talking about it on the shows over the weekend too, because I'm probably going to take a little break. But what it comes down to, and anybody that's been listening for a long time has obviously heard my voice change over the last probably year to year and a half. My intake while talking, my breathing is louder, and my, you know, luxurious tones are forced. By the time we're done here, I'll be pushing words out. And obviously I'm not used to that. I have been singing since I was a little kid. I was in a band throughout my 20s. I have been in debate. I have argued and screamed. I have been on the radio off and on for years. I've been doing these podcasts and everything else that I do. I do voiceover work. So I talk a lot. My voice, you know, yeah, it's
your instrument.
It is. And it's been getting wacky. And over the last couple of winters, I get a little respiratory thing and I can't figure out what it is. It's probably just a small walking pneumonia, something, because antibiotics, the last two winters I've tried Z-Packs and it hasn't done anything. And I couldn't figure out anything. So I went to an ENT and I just laid it out. I'm like, here are my three problems. And they are my ears, my nose, and my throat. And I need you to understand that I am not coming to you asking for three doctor's visits in one. These are connected. My problems are fucking connected. And I just need you to take a step back and let's talk about how they all attach to one another. Because normally I go to the doc and they're like, well, we can do one of these. And this particular ENT was totally cool with it and apparently didn't need the lecture. So I don't feel bad. You know, he can go to a seminar and tell everybody what assholes they're being because I have doctor problems. So starting oddly with my nose, I've broken it a few times in my life. And so my septum is crooked, I guess is the best way to put it. And so, you know, on one side up the top of my nose, it's blocking airflow. And on the bottom of my nose, it's blocking airflow. And then there's these two other things of name I can't remember. And those are causing problems. Need to go in. And all of that needs to go. They need to break my nose and then rebuild the septum back where it needs to be. I thought, just because I've had my nose straightened a few times, that it'd just be, okay, you numb it up, you break it again, you put it back where it needs to go. And he's like, no, we can't do that. It's obviously messed up, you know, and here's why. So then the place where your ears attach to your throat, which, by the way, I'm an English major. I had no idea that my ears went into my throat. That's new on me. I had no idea.
Eustachian tubes.
Yeah. So you can put a penny in your ear and you can spit it out. Maybe. Don't do that. No, I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying if you lose a pee, there's a chance you could cough it up.
do this.
Yeah, so they went in there and everything's sort of okay. There's something going on with my ears, and he thinks that that is connected to the fact that there's a problem in my throat. So then you get down to the vocal cords, and this is where I get freaked out, because these are muscles that I have trained now for decades. Mm-hmm. And I turned 45, finally go to the ENT, and he's like, yeah, you got problems. And that is basically that, and he gave me a long phrase for it, but the muscles that run the vocal cords don't unclench as I talk. It's not that they're overdeveloped. They just don't know to stop whatever it is they're doing, which makes it harder and harder and harder to talk earlier. So they got to go in and do something there, which they can do when they fix my nose and the other parts. And it's all just a big tumble full of mess. But for me, and the happiest part was, it's like, there's no damage to the vocal cord. There's just, there needs to be a scraping, obviously. And then a retraining on something, after they fix my nose. Where this becomes problematic for me is that, and this is a great doctor's office, by the way, and fantastic doctor, and the staff was amazing. Is down at the specialty, for those that are here near me, specialty surgery center, at the South Jordan hospital campus. Dr. Gilbert. This is Dr. Gilbert. Gilbert.
This is free advertising, but people go there. Go there. Even if you have any problems with your nose, ears, or throat.
There is, I mean, everybody was fantastic. There is one receptionist there, and, you know, to the person who sent me there.
Because you're going through some changes.
Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Anyway, she was very, very nice, and very, very friendly. And seriously took care of me, because I was kind of freaking out. I talk. It's what I do. People do the game where it's like, oh, you lose a hand, how do you handle it? You lose a foot, how do you handle it? Losing my voice, man, I would just lose my shit. I really would. So anyway, my insurance will cover 33% of the procedure, because I'm not the principal.
You haven't met your deductible, right?
Oh yeah, we burned through the deductible, but you know, it's this is what they cover. It's how they cover it. It's part of the plan, because it's surgery and not just normal doctor shit. If I were getting my knee worked on, fine, they'd cover 70-30. You know, if I were getting my elbows worked on, 70-30. My shoulders, 70-30. For some reason, my nose and my throat, you know, they do a third and I do the rest. So I can't afford it at all. Nowhere fucking near. The whole surgery is going to run around 12 to 14 grand. And that's
GoFundMe.
You know, I'm thinking about it, and I don't know that I have the energy. There are people out there that are fucking dying that need that sort of attention more than I do, you know?
Well, okay. Just put it, I know who you're talking about. I know just rally about everybody. I know we're talking in generality. And who specifically we're talking about. But the point is, to me, Jeff, the point is this, with life and its limitations, you're trying to make a living off of what talents you do have. And if those talents become more and more unreachable, if you can't use them.
Well, Christ, I'd have to be a writer again, and that's hard. So, all right, look, so anyway, that's where I'm at, and I know over the course of the next few weeks, and the previous few weeks, there are going to be just weekends where I just can't do it. You know, it gets tired, and so if we skip a week or two here or there, please, just, we're not going anywhere. This is just me being a pussy, and I promise I'll catch back up. So with that said, sir.
Yes, of course.
1492.
Oh my God, going full Columbus.
Well, That douchebag has a fucking holiday thanks to a bunch of weird ass genocide fetishing Catholics. So I want to cover this a little bit and then bring us closer to the modern day. But okay. He left Palos, Spain, August 3rd of 1492.
Because everybody saw it in 1492, the Ridley Scott movie with Gerard Depardieu. But go on.
The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
They went across the Atlantic.
Right. They were looking for India. Now, I had a fun joke about that this week. A buddy of mine's kid just got his Eagle Scout, and he asked me to do the representation of his duty to God, which is fucking hilarious. And instead of giving him some sort of a joke prayer, I gave him a lecture. And part of that was being true to yourself and not comparing yourself to others. Because when Leif Erikson made it to the New World, he didn't scream, "Holy shit, India!" He just said, "My arms are tired. Let's rest here for the winter." And then they went back. Right. So as we know very, very well, now the more exuberant kink of the Spaniards and their priests and their Inquisition, that when they got to the New World, they misbehaved quite a bit. And where you can lay that down for, honestly, it's exceptionalism. And at that time, anywhere a white guy went, and I'm including Spain as white for this because they're European. Anywhere a European went, that was theirs. They put a flag on and they just started chopping up the indigenous folks.
It's Italy, Spain, France,
Holland, Portugal, England, all of them. Bad behavior.
But not Ireland and Scotland. We are the friggin' conquered.
That's true. I mean, this is something we will talk about in another show, but the mass exodus or the purging of Scotland in the 1700s, still, Scotland, while it was being emptied of its people, managed to bring about the Scottish Enlightenment that basically led to the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. Added onto that, it also gave us the lending library, public schools. It's sometimes an oppressed people can really find a way to shine. Whereas in the case of Columbus reaching the New World,
pillage.
Well, I just sort of murdered everybody. One of my favorite anecdotes over the last week was talking about how he would just start cutting off parts of the folks that he ran into because they wouldn't tell him where the city of gold was. Because as we know now, thanks to satellites searching for it, there isn't one. They did have some, but not a fucking city's worth. And who the hell would build with that soft of metal anyway? You know? So, Spanish exceptionalism, European exceptionalism. Everywhere they go, they basically murder the fuck out of everyone they come across. I am not including some Asian countries in this particular lesson today. Because we know how badly Japan really, really started mangling anybody that showed up there until the mid-1800s when they were like, hey, some of this stuff isn't bad once you get them to wash. So the population figures for indigenous peoples in America before Christopher Columbus, while they are impossible to establish with any pinpointed, you know, specificity, with archaeological data, written records from early settlers, we're looking at a number in the area down there. The pre-Columbian population was as low as, I love this phrase, 10 million indigenous peoples. By the end of the 20th century, the people in that area are around 50 million, right?
Right.
Right. So contact with the New World led to the European colonization of the South and Central Americas. Because it's the most important fucking thing to remember is that America was not discovered by Columbus. It was discovered by a guy with an Italian name that is sounds like America.
Yes.
It was, well, fuck that. It was discovered by fucking Leif Erikson.
Amerigo Vespucci,
Amerigo, yes. Yeah, Amerigo Vespucci. We should be the United States of Amerigo. Or the Vespucci's. So one of the things that the white folks do when we go somewhere is once we're really good at killing the folks that were there when we showed up, we tend to take everything of value and then dump our societal trash. And that societal trash tends to make babies. And those babies make babies. And on and on and on. And the next thing you know, even if you weren't murdering everyone in the area, the genocide would still continue based on the fact that you have done a really good job at, you know, breeding a culture away. It's depopulation from that. It's the prima nocta, you know, writ large. So we do that. We bring smallpox, typhus, measles, the flu, the plague, cholera, malaria, tuberculosis, mumps, yellow fever.
Bad attitudes.
Pertussis.
Mm.
Pertussis.
Mm-hmm.
And
cough that up.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Now, jump forward. Jump forward a little bit. We're coming out of the 1800s and into the early 1900s. And you have added to exceptionalism, you have imperialism. Because imperialism is what led England to basically take over most of the world. And it was a retreat from imperialism that allowed Britain to lose control of most of the world. But on top of imperialism, there is militarism and nationalism. And there was a huge military fetish coming out of the 1800s into the 1900s. And it was Germany that had the largest military buildup. Right. And you had these two countries that were building out their navies as fast as they possibly could. Their ground troops were being trained and equipped as fast as they possibly could. And keep in mind that at this point, coming out of those 1800s, you basically had the UK on top of the world at having beaten nearly everyone except America, including Napoleon twice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So with all of that, you have different European countries pretending they own the people of all these other countries all over the world. And then nationalism raises its ugly head. You see how I'm working us towards modern day.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And so basically World War One, the Slavs in Bosnia, right, did not want to be part of the Austria-Hungarian Empire anymore. They wanted to be part of Serbia. Okay. And then somebody shot the shit out of Archduke Franz Ferdinand and the wheels came off. The wheels absolutely came off to the point where Germany declares war on Russia. Germany begins to mobilize with its alliance with Serbia. Right? Austria-Hungary declares war on Serbia. And now all of Europe is just fucking with one another. And again, America showed up right at the end on that one. People are like, America showed up and the war ended. It's like, no, it probably would have ended anyway. We just showed up and turns out we're really, really good with guns. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay, go
these
on.
Are the I things that have led to hysteria, you know, and over basically egotistical steroided rage that tends to blow entire chunks of the geography you know, into full-out warfare. We saw that same buildup throughout the Cold War, where, again, military fetishism and nationalism led to communist Russia and capitalist America butting heads with one another for decades. And then communist Russia ran out of money. And so capitalist America went, woohoo, we win. Not realizing that, as Orwell said, you know, right, all animals are equal, just some animals are more equal than others. And there is a hierarchy outside of the Russian mafia of former KGB agents, former government employees, all of that, that remember how fucking great it was to be on top of the world and to have an oppressed society that shared everything that you let them have to share. And so we're looking at that. We're looking at other European countries. We've now included the Middle East because basically they got given everything. It's like, here you go. Go nuts after World War II. And they're like, well, we want to go back to before World War II. We're looking for the, you know, the Stone Age. That's what we'd like, please. And all of these different countries with their own exceptionalism and their own military fetishism.
You're talking about something that Trump talked about in his inauguration speech, which is fucking crazy. Led to its own device. It led to its own devices. I mean, that's how can countries actually exist in that kind of environment?
Right. Look, right.
So the only reason that we had a United Nations and countries stopping each other from committing full thermonuclear war in the world was that they realized that there was an interdependence between each other, and that by standing down, they could actually find some type of geopolitical cooperation, and those wars became small hot wars in different small places around the world.
But right. On. Right. It's you're fighting war by proxy.
Correct.
And so one of the problems that America has is its inability to think poorly of itself. You go back to Romney's, how dare you apologize? You know, we committed a genocide against a race of people so that we could have more farms. Far as I'm concerned, we owe the First Peoples of America a fucking apology. We have dabbled in
swaths of think? This country. We owe them everything back.
Yeah, we pulled millions in. Oh, now great. Now I got a Midnight Oil song stuck in my head. My bed is burning. So we have dabbled quite extensively throughout Central and South America. We have propped up bad guys, dictators, oligarchs, all for our own selfish commercial interests. And all that has led to is insane amounts of corruption and violence that are down there that you can track back to the fact that we put fucking psychopaths, sociopaths, and other undesirables in charge of countries in which human beings lived their day-to-day lives. And thanks to us, they're fucked. Argentina being a very, very good one. So you have, when you take this step back and you look at world history, Germany figured out what they did. They own it. They've made it illegal. You cannot champion Nazism. It's against the law. Now, of course, people do it and they get away with it. But still, there was a guy that I saw a couple of summers back at a parade who gave a Nazi salute to some float or another and was immediately nabbed by the cops and did 6 months in jail.
Wow.
America refuses to look into the mirror of our own history. We refuse to look at our own bad behavior and call it what it is. Our exceptionalism has run to dangerous levels that we only see before mass conflicts in the confines and the examples of history. And so every time I see a tweet or something on, you know, one of the social media things where somebody is being hyperbolic and says that Trump is leading us to war, there's always that second where I'm like, okay, where are we going first? Because it is going to happen. You can't behave like this on a global stage. You know, Teddy Roosevelt wasn't this blunt, and he was a blunt son of a bitch. Right. And we will look, there is an overall feeling. And I hear this when I talk to folks that I know and people on the left and even some new friends from the right, that everybody's just like, we just got to make it to January. We just got to make it to January. That's a year. He's got three more on top of that. The cliched trope of, dear God, what have I done, would only be accurate in this case had the majority of people that voted for him actually taken a look and come to the realization that they have caused a problem, and that this problem is going to end up costing millions of lives all over the world. I'm not even going to get into the whole EPA. There's just too much. There's too much. There's at least two to three things a day.
Yeah.
Of the overreach of dipshittery that comes out of this fucker's head, and the way that the federal Republicans just run around behind him. I don't think they like him. I think they recognize him for crazy, but they also seem to have realized that they now exist in a vacuum where they can do whatever the fuck they want. And you will see coming out of this Congress and the one after it, if Trump is a single term, and if America survives in a way that we continue to have prosperity and food. But you will see this Congress and the next Congress full of Republicans that have gerrymandered their asses into where they are now becoming billionaires, not just multimillionaires, but billionaires, because they are writing their own ticket for how much money they're going to make when they are done basically stealing from you and I.
Exactly. Because that's the thing. They would knock over the government to use the government as their own personal ATM. So not only do you have a cacistocracy, you have a kleptocracy. So it's cacistocracy, the very worst people that are involved. But the very fact is you've got so many people, especially in the cabinet level, just blindly taking not just trips, whatever else that they're doing. I mean, there was a whole bunch of things that Rachel talked about tonight about the Interior Secretary Zinke, who used to be a rep from Montana. Just taking all of these trips, we're just talking in miniature about the grander scale of things.
Sure.
But that's the point. The point is that it is their ATM.
Well, yeah. And what it comes down to is it's theft and conquest. And that is...
conquest, which is what they did in November.
It's what they did in November. It's what we did in World War II. It's what we did in World War I, where we were on the side of the angels and we stopped the conquest. And then we are now putting ourselves in the position of those that didn't. We hearken back to the behavior of Europeans all the way to, you know, I mean, and it's, I mean, the list is long and I'm certainly not getting into it, but just because this week Columbus seems to work. Columbus was the greed and avarice of the throne of Spain, made manifest in one sociopath whose drive to be rich let him do and say anything to a people that were powerless to fight back against him. And if that is not a slightly more scurvy-ridden reflection of what we're going through now, I don't know what is. So
the lesson of Christoph Colombo, however, we remember what happened to him in the very end. And he was hacked to bits upon his return to America, if I remember correctly.
We don't do that sort of thing anymore. And I'm not saying more's the pity, but I might be thinking it. All right, let's take a break. Let's take a break.
Mine if it hadn't been to those meddling kids.
Hey, folks, Jeff here.
And JC here.
Oh, and Taylor.
I want to talk to you about Patreon. Patreon is how, for the most part, we are paying the bills around here.
Come on, help us pay some bills.
It's important. These shows cost money to both make and distribute, and we don't ask for money very often. And what we're asking for here is you, as a listener, pitching in $5, $10 a month, you know, over the course of the year to help us grow and get bigger. We need it now. More than ever.
But look, you're not just throwing us money. We're going to give you something really unique for your money. Normally, everything you get from us is free. You get a free download of our podcast, The Left Show, the world's greatest podcast, comic book podcast, and of course...
The truck stop visits.
Yeah, the truck stop visits and Geek Therapist. And instead, we're going to give you exclusive content, stuff that we record separately that is then put out for only you to listen to.
Yeah, and I don't have dollar restrictions on that stuff. You pitch in $5 a month, you pitch in $25 a month, that's it. There are goals there if you do throw in a little bit extra. We send you presents as soon as I can find them.
Yeah.
And for those of you that are waiting for presents, I just need to find the boxes. Don't worry about it. But no, with Geek Therapist, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and of course this, The Left Show, and our exclusive content, you get more as a Patreon member of our family than you do anywhere else. So... go to the website for your favorite of the Defend Media families, whether that be theleftshow.com, worldsgreatestpodcast.com, or geektherapist.com. Click on the Patreon button, become a part of the family, and start getting the cool shit nobody else is getting.
You know you want it. You know you do.
Just do it.
There are 10 jillion podcasts in this crazy world, but there is only one that serves a fresh pot of, hi, how do you do? I'm Tom, your host of the Coffee Cast. My mission is to make it as compelling a listen as you'll find it. I'll talk about all kinds of subjects. Sometimes I'll have guests. Good stories, because people listen to what interests them. And sometimes it's the Coffee Cast. So if you're listening as you're texting the seventh draft of a resignation message to that soon-to-be former psychopathic boss, gift shopping rotary phones for your great-great aunt, or skydiving for the first time without a parachute, whoops, welcome to the Coffee Cast. Remember, you can download a fresh Coffee Cast podcast anytime at Stitcher and iTunes, and now on demand on the Progressive Voices app and progressivevoices.com. So until the next pod gets brewed, I'll do my best to keep it fresh. The Coffee Cast Podcast.
I do, you know.
Go on.
Well, you know, it's we're talking about the fact that I can't afford to get fucking surgery, and I always want to drop back to the goddamn Patreon.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
well, you know, if you want to come up with like what 7, 10, 13 thousand on Patreon, it's kind of hard to do. But
oh, that's not going to happen. I'm not a pretty girl taking my top off. however, since I am a fat man and you're letting me keep my top on, a small monthly donation through Patreon will keep my shirt attached to my person. Think about it. You don't want this on the Tumblr, do you?
No. No, sir. No. Besides, finger gets kind of...
So, just real quick, because you said earlier what you wanted to talk about a little bit, and that was... as we record this on the 11th, and I'm dropping this on the 12th, but today in 1975, Bruce Springsteen hit the pop charts with Born Jesus to Run. God.
I had never heard of Bruce Springsteen. I had first walked into college a month before in 1975, and I had two roommates who were downright just Stone Springsteen fanatics, aficionados. They played, you know, the first two Springsteen albums, and my head was just someplace else. I'm sorry, you guys. I really am. And I saw that whole thing happen with Born to Run and how it exploded. Just, and as a matter of fact, for you prog people, yesterday was the 48th anniversary of King Crimson's In the Court of the Crimson King.
Nice. So nice.
Springsteen was, here's what he did. He legitimized and brought back home the soul, the spirit of American rock. And that was that there are a lot of real emotional. It took me some time, but there are some important groundings in that album that are that I'll take with me to my grave.
Don't no time soon, I hope. what was I told you my buddy's duty to God thing, his Boy Scout thing, the end of my prayer, as it were. It was the old Scottish saying that may you live to be 110 and may mine be the last voice you hear. And then of course I'm like, and this is where normal people say amen and walked off. So no time soon, sir. May you live to be 110.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate that, but I hope in good health.
And may
if
mine.
Anything, I can't imagine being 80. I can't imagine being 70. I can't imagine being 60. It's just, it's fucking.
Well, dude, I never look, and I don't mean this in any sort of a way. You know, this wasn't a tough guy thing. It wasn't a James Dean thing because I still can't stand that little fucker. I never thought I'd make it past 30. I just could not see a way in which I had led my life through my 20s that I could possibly fucking survive. And basically I thought that I would die by misadventure. And instead, I ended up having kids. So that was one death and now I'm back. Different manifestation.
Make it through my teens and here we are down the road and you know, we've all had kids and it's great sticking around because they're just a fuckload of fun.
So I bring you to music on to purpose. Music. And you and I have done this a few times. And but this time even I have been listening a lot to the Traveling Wilburys. A collection of the most unlikely bandmates of all time.
Very organic.
Such a screwy little group of guys.
Just what talent?
Yeah. I mean,
next to the I wasn't going to say the Outlaws, but I was thinking about Johnny Cash and Kris Kristofferson, and that was a thing in the 80s.
Oh, what were they? I'm typing it. Johnny Cash supergroup.
Yeah, it was Kris Kristofferson, Johnny Cash. It was why am I blank? Oh, Willie was in it.
Yeah.
And then
The Highwaymen,
of course.
They had some really terrible stuff, but for what it's worth, so did the Wilburys.
Just, for sure.
There was something about the time that these guys got together where you had some of the most talented sons of bitches in the world making some really strange shit, including with the Highwaymen, their song, The Highwayman, which is just the silly, it's the reincarnation of a douchebag, you know? The only time the guy's not an asshole is when he's working a union job on a rig and he falls into the concrete and gets buried as part of a stadium. Yeah, otherwise, like, I was stealing something and I got deaded. And then I stole something else and I got murdered. And then I stole something else, totally dead. And then I fell into some concrete and I'm dead. And as far as I'm concerned, that one, I don't care what you say, that one right there, that's Hoffa. They're talking about Hoffa.
Now, there's a legend to the WPA project, the dam projects, if not the Cooley Dam, the dam that's outside of Las Vegas, the Hoover Dam.
Yes.
And that there were legends that there were people who fell into it because and were entombed there. And apparently, from my understanding and the tours, a couple of tours, that was just legend, just pure legend.
No, it's not a legend.
Okay, well then it actually happened, and people are actually entombed in there. So
not many, but I mean, you think about when you're laying that much concrete, and so much of that is concrete, yeah. And you have that much concrete, and you are pouring it at the rate that they were pouring it, and somebody goes in, you can't get them out, you can't,
and the machines broke down and. Things collapsed and people died, terrible deaths that we're talking a scale, a massive scale.
Yeah.
Beyond anybody's ability at that time.
There's no doubt in my mind that your tour guide was whitewashing history to make everybody have a happy fucking feeling when they walked off. No doubt.
They're all bad people anyway.
Yeah.
And what country? We are just talking about countries that in the 1800s and beyond, who have fought civil wars and have flown the flags of those of whom they defeated. Only the United States allows the Dixie swastika. Now, this is a thing to me because you were born and raised in Utah. I was born and raised in Union Territory in New York. And I was
born in California.
You're born in California. So there's one more thing I didn't know.
But
there's two things I got wrong.
I got bought by the Mormons and dragged to Mormon land when I was just a few days old. But I just want you to know, I was not born here.
Okay.
It's very important to me that we have that.
Now, Tom Petty died last Monday.
Yeah.
And to a lot of us, to me, actually, Petty, to me, typifies or is the spirit of the underdog. And say what you will, maybe you hate his music, maybe you love his music, but there's just something that you just cannot put down about it. And to me, no matter how many times I've seen him, no matter how many times he gets played on the radio, there's just something that just felt American and authentic about it.
I haven't owned any Tom Petty in a long time.
No Tom Petty records.
However, he's one of the few that when he pops up on the radio, I turn it up. It's not like the Red Hot Chili Peppers where I change the channel. Tom Petty pops on and it doesn't matter what fucking song it is. I turn it up and I sing along because I know all the words to almost everything he's ever done as Tom Petty. You know, not so much the Woolburys, but yeah, no, he's just, it's, you know, his sound, you know, what's coming, you know, the words, whether you think you do or not.
And he came up at a time, right at the time when punk was beginning to break. And a lot of critics mistakenly thought because of the sneer and their attitude that they too were punk, but they're not. They never were. They were authentic American. They were doing something different than everybody else. Everybody else around them, because they were from South, they were from Gainesville, Florida, that they were more authentic, middle of the road rock, while everybody else was doing Freebird and Allman Brothers and stuff. So this is from a part of their history where Petty had gone through and in the middle of the 80s done an album based on his Southern roots. And there was a period where they had used the Confederate flag. And here's a person who has come around and realized what a mistake it was to go there. And he said that the flag shouldn't represent us in any way. It's like how a swastika looks to a Jewish person. So this was from 2015. And it was about the time when South Carolina's decision to lower the Confederate flag in their state house had caused a wide range of reactions.
I'm sorry, did you say a wide range of reactions?
While many acts are cheering the decision of the South Carolina legislature, this is written in, a couple of years ago, like July 2015, some acts are continuing to sell Confederate flag merchandises and assholes like Kid Rock. So in this article, which is about Tom Petty, isn't Kid Rock from the Midwest? Tom Petty asks with a chuckle. I think they were on the other side of the Civil War. So Petty, who featured the Confederate flag prominently on stage during his Southern Accents tour in 85, spoke to Rolling Stone hours after the flag was taken down to express remorse for his actions. And he said, "The Confederate flag was the wallpaper of the South when I was a kid growing up in Gainesville, Florida. As soon as I got out of upstate New York, you would see, you're in upstate New York, you're in Union territory, people would be flying the Confederate flag. Pissed me off." Back to Petty. He goes, I always knew it had to do with the Civil War, but the South had adopted it as its logo. I was pretty ignorant of what it actually meant. It was on a flagpole in front of the courthouse. I often saw it in Western movies. I honestly didn't give it much thought, although I should have. In 1985, I released an album called Southern Accents. It began as a concept record about the South, but the concept parts slipped away probably 70% or so into the album. I just let it go, but the Confederate flag part became part of the marketing for the tour, and I wished I had given it more thought. It was just a downright stupid thing to do. And it happened because I had one song in the album called Rebels. It's spoken from the point of view of the character who talks about the traditions that have been handed down from family to family for so long that he almost feels guilty about the war. He still blames the North for the discomfort of his life, so my thought was the best way to illustrate the character was to use the Confederate flag. I used it on stage during that song, and I regretted it pretty quickly. When we toured 2 years later, I noticed people in the audience wearing Confederate flag bandanas and things like that. One night, somebody threw one on stage, and I stopped everything, and I gave a speech about it, and I said, look, this was to illustrate a character. This is not who we are. Having gone through this, I would prefer if no one would ever bring a Confederate flag to our shows again, because this isn't who we are. It got a mixed reaction. There were some boos and some cheers, but honestly, it's a little amazing to me because I never saw one again after that speech in that one town. Fortunately, that went away, but it left me feeling stupid. That's the word I can use. I felt stupid. I had just been a little bit more if I had just been a little bit more observant about things going around me. It wouldn't have happened. We did do a live record, Pack Up the Plantation Live, and there was a picture inside of us playing in front of one. I went back and I had it removed from the record, and it took a little time to get it done, but it did get done. I still feel bad about it. I've just always regretted it. I would never do anything to hurt someone. Lowering the flag from the State House grounds was the right decision. That flag shouldn't have any part in our government. It shouldn't represent us in any way. The war is over. You know, it's a bit ironic. The only time I know of where we defeated a country in war and then we flew their flag. But Americans were on both sides of the issues. I'm sure some people still carry it to their graves. You can just about guess who. That Southern pride gets transferred from generation to generation. I'm sure that a lot of people that applaud it don't... this is where I disagree with them, don't mean it in a racial way. But then again, I have to give them, as I do myself, a stupid mark. If you think a bit longer, there's bad connotations to this. They might have it at football games or whatever, but they also have it at Klan rallies. That's part of it in any way. It doesn't belong in any way representing the United States of America. To this day, I've got good feelings about the South in many ways. There's many wonderful people down there. There's still many people affected by what their relatives taught them. He says it isn't necessarily racism. Jesus. They don't like Yankees. They don't like the North. But when they wave the flag, they aren't stopping to think how it looks to a black person. I blame myself for not doing that. I should have gone around the fence and taken a good look at it. But honestly, it all stemmed from my trying to illustrate a character. I then just let it out of control as a marketing device for the record. It was dumb, and it shouldn't have happened. Again, people need to think about how it looks to a black person. It's awful. It's like how a swastika looks to a Jewish person. It shouldn't be on flagpoles. Beyond the flag issue, we're living in a time that I never thought we'd see. The way we're losing black men and citizens in general is horrific. What's going on in society is unforgivable. As a country, we should be more concerned with why the police are getting away with targeting black men and killing them for no reason. That's a bigger issue than the flag. Years from now, people will look back on today and say, you mean we privatized the prisons so there's no profit unless the prison is full? You think someone in kindergarten would figure out how stupid that is? We're creating so many of our own problems. And that was that on Tom Petty on the past Confederate flag. Lady Felder was downright stupid.
I agree. And I do. You know what? I actually do know a pair of Southern boys. They do not fly the flag anymore because they've realized the situational connotations of it, but they never, I mean, it's the top of the General Lee. That was my introduction to the Confederate flag, you know, And and the General Lee to me is always the car that the Duke boys did their moonshining in. You ever noticed the lack of moonshine in that particular show? But they were moonshine. They were shiners. So there was a period for me. And again, there was a time in my life where I was completely fucking ignorant of my white privilege because I didn't know that it was a thing. And that was basically based on the opposite of Twain's advice to travel. And I hadn't much yet. But people were getting pretty pissed about it. I guess early 90s is when I first started paying attention to it, 90, 91. And, you know, I was like, well, what the hell, man? It's just a Duke boys car. It's just that. Oh, it's just a thing. Oh, it's just the stuff. And then it was a guy that I was friends with when I first moved to Denver when I was 18, a gentleman with a bit more pigment than I have. Okay, a lot more. He's African-American. Mm-hmm. And he told me almost exactly what you just said about Petty. He's like, oh, well, just consider what it's like to be a black guy and to see people floating that flag around. And you know full well what the fuck it meant. And I was like,
the fuck it meant means we are here to own people.
Yeah.
Period.
And that, I went,
that's the whole thing. And they fight to own people.
Yeah, that was it. I'm all done. You know, yeah. I mean, it's really, some of us are can, and I'm seriously not polishing my own knob here, but there are people that, having heard new information or data, can reevaluate something and come to a new conclusion. And mine was, why are they picking on the Duke boys? And then 15 seconds later was, holy shit, I am never, ever buying anything with that fucking flag on it ever again. I think I had a belt buckle at the time, you know? I love flags. I love the outlaw Scottish flag. It's the one I fly for Scottish holidays. It's the saltier. The Bruce.
The saltier is what it's called. Yeah.
That's the one I fly. It's a fucking blue with the white X. Come on. Yeah. That's boring.
That's Scotland.
Yeah. I like the old Scotland. I like the old flag.
Yeah, that's not the same. That's totally not the same thing. I mean, I have to actually say I am maybe more snooty, snobby, being raised in a semi upstate New York town, a rust belt, dying rust belt town at the tip edge of Appalachia. As soon as you step out of Appalachia, the Dixie swastika is everywhere. And we grew up and were educated about what the Civil War was all about and the consequences of all that. And I just have a real problem with that when I look at it. It's like a bull that looks at a red cape. I just like fucking lose it. I just like fucking get rid of that goddamn thing. And it was one of the things that really pissed me off about Petty, because I didn't understand it when I saw that in the 80s. And I was going, what the fuck are you doing? But reading this tells me that there are people who are capable of a Saul to Paul transition, that they are capable of understanding that there are mistakes. People are capable of it, no matter what age that they are. And
you sure you're not misspelling were?
Were. I think I just did.
Yeah.
So, but the bigger thing, of course, is Petty dying, which was really a huge surprise. Now, I know we're talking about stuff that happened last week, but we haven't been here in front of the mic, you know, for a while, but it's important to pick up and talk about some of the stuff. And
well, it's not like it's a situation that's going to change anytime soon.
Not really, so but here's something that I...
It's not like talking about Trump, where by the time we fucking air these episodes, it's all gone to shit even more. And it's like, oh, that stuff we talked about seems pretty fucking tame compared to what happened 10 minutes after we turned off the goddamn microphones.
Because there happens to be breaking news.
This is
Jeff, the Los Angeles County coroner, has determined the cause of death for singer-songwriter Tom Petty, officials said Wednesday. Petty, 66, died Monday, October 2nd at UCLA Medical Center after he became unconscious At his Malibu home, a statement from the performer's manager said to Petty, died of cardiac arrest. Note that this news came from his manager, and who trusts managers? An official determination of the cause of death is the jurisdiction of the coroner, said L.A. County Coroner Department spokesman. The coroner investigates all deaths, even natural ones. Now, apparently the LAPD and the L.A. County Coroner were able to provide the press a timeline of Petty's last morning. Rocker Tom Petty woke in his Malibu home to a Monday, October 2nd, just like any other day, as he sipped a freshly poured cup of French roast coffee. He opened his copy of the Los Angeles Times and saw the horrific news of the Las Vegas massacre. News like that would send anyone into cardiac arrest, but that's not what did in Tom Petty. Surveillance cameras in the kitchen of the Petty home show the shocking details of what happened next. As Tom lowered his paper to take another sip of Java, with his now shaking hands, he got another shock. Sitting across from him was Fleetwood Mac vocalist Stevie Nicks. That's Stevie Nicks, who pursued, stalked, and hounded Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers to write and record their 1981 hit. Stevie wasn't done knocking on Petty's front door, or maybe his back door, or maybe his side door. Stevie was too busy feeding the monkey. Stevie Nicks hungered for a new hit. Stevie Nicks needed a new hit, and for Tom's sins, he would give her one. Now that Tom was home, after dragging his heart around, he had to pay the belladonna. I told you, don't come around here no more, scolded Petty. I won't back down, replied Stevie. Tom said, you can send me up at the... Yeah, I get it. Gates of hell, Tom. This doesn't have to be the big get even. This doesn't have to be anything at all, cried Stevie. Don't do me like that, was Petty's last response. What happened next will shock even the hardest of heartbreakers. Stevie Nicks leapt across the table and struck Petty in the chest using the deadliest of martial arts moves. Pai Mei's five-point exploding heart technique. The LAPD tonight released a recording of the final few seconds of Petty's first death.
Huh. Pai Mei taught you the five-point palm exploding heart technique.
Of course he did.
Why didn't you tell me?
I don't know.
No, you're not a bad person. You're a terrific person. You're my favorite person.
Isn't that just nice? Petty, found unresponsive, was rushed to UCLA Medical Center, where Tom fought gallantly for a while longer, then, according to reports, passed away. Malibu investigators cannot confirm the whereabouts of Stevie Nicks' Black Widow and are interviewing family and friends. Stevie Nicks is now a person of interest to the FBI, as the recent cases of suspicious rock star deaths have been reopened. Glenn Frey of the Eagles, Greg Allman, Prince, Chris Cornell of Soundgarden, David Bowie, Stevie Danz, Walter Becker, and quite possibly the Trololo guy, although he was Russian and really, really, really old. All musicians' deaths have now been ruled suspicious, with Stevie Nicks' Black Widow still at large with a deadly weapon that is killer pipes, and one count of possession of a stolen vehicle, a 1976 Rhiannon broomstick. However, as of this hour, the LAPD has updated reports that is retracted confirmation of Tom Petty's death, because Tom fucking Petty never dies. That's why. Never before has a rocker foretold his demise based on the very name of his own band. Tom Petty, you beautiful American genius.
Yeah, there you go.
by the way, now that OJ's out, he could probably find the real killer. Okay, you guys can stop typing now. Okay, there you go.
It's hard to get him to stop once you get him going. The monkeys you have trying to write the Shakespeare?
Of a room full of people.
Just, is it a million monkeys on a million typewriters?
They used to be Bleo Burnett, but depends what agency you hated most.
Ah. Well, there we go. It's all a bucket of fucked.
Did you say bucket of fuck?
Fucked. Bucket of fucked. Bucket of fuck. I could use
How about that? We got through an entire show without talking about Kellyanne Conway.
Dude.
Desiccated Harridan.
That's your kink. I don't get it. I don't. I don't know. Once she dressed up like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, I was like, I can't take anything she ever does seriously ever again. Just not going to happen. Well, buddy, this was good. We got to try and do this again on time.
Okay. No worries about that. Yeah. There's a lot of shit going down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life's a.
But yeah, that's right. Because the only thing I always forget is we actually have a sign out music. We have music that takes us out. So, all right, man, it's been fantastic.
Fantastic.
Now I've got the music low enough that you could say something.
Well, I mean, we can talk over the top. That's fine. But, you know, the fine folks probably want to listen to it.
Let's deny them.
Okay.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Banana.
Banana who?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Banana.
Okay, banana who?
Knock, knock.
Open the fucking door. Who's there?
Orange.
Orange. Who?
Orange, you glad I didn't say banana?
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming.
Absolutely. Good night, sir. Good.
understandable.